They want me to get rid of my dog. Can they do that?
I'm being fined for leaving my garage door open too long.
What are covenants? Do I have any rights?
Help, I feel like I've left the American zone.
If you want the answers to those questions, join me, Sue Bartholomew, and my guests on The Commons every Saturday from 2 to 3 right here on WBR Fairfax Radio. We'll ask the experts and we'll untangle the truth about what's left of our property rights.
On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory membership homeowners associations. Join us as we explore this relatively new world of controlled living, which includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes. Living in a common ownership development means giving up the American dream. It means giving up your constitutional rights and control over your most valuable asset, your home. Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone. This is On the Commons, and I am Sue Bartholomew. Joining me today on the Commons is Sarah Benson, all the way from Chicago, and I don't know what the weather's like over there, but it's rainy and quite miserable over here. So thank you, Sarah. Thank you for joining us.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me, Sue.
All right. Sarah, you're a realtor. You've been dealing with property, condos, HOAs for many more years than I even knew the damn things existed. And that brings me to my point today. We don't really know what we're getting into, and nobody has ever asked us. Nobody has ever listened to us. Nobody has ever said, well, Sue, what do you think? Of course, being a big mouth, I'm here talking about it all the time, so now you know what I think. But how many people are out there, Sarah, who don't have a voice, who are afraid of speaking up?
Oh, millions. Millions and millions of people across the country. If the estimates are 68 million people living in HOAs, I would double that number easily as to the number of people out there that either don't know or don't have a voice when it comes to association-governed housing.
Why is that?
I believe it's largely an issue of education.
So are people afraid of talking? I mean, I know that when there's conflict in an HOA and somebody's being singled out and getting the treatment, if you will, by the board, that even friends and neighbors are a little bit afraid of speaking out and reaching out to help these people, to help their neighbors. So is it the same thing? Is there some fear involved in talking out?
Absolutely. The fear is once the machine starts to run, and by saying machine, I'm referring to singling out an owner and all of the aftermath that's associated with the fining and the rumors within the community, and then, you know, the legal action if necessary. Once that machine starts to run, the fear is so palpable. It's not just the individual that's being targeted or selected, but it's also the people around that individual that also have the fear. And I think I may have told you in the past that I actually, during one occasion, hired a psychologist to meet with the homeowners because they were so fearful of their board. And we actually had an impromptu owners meeting at a Starbucks here in Chicago and called the owners together. And the psychologist spoke about fear and bullies and fear of being singled out or targeted and how to deal with that. And she brought folders for all of the owners with literature about what being bullied is all about. And that's what's going on.
So what's the answer? I mean, we've talked about legislation that would require disclosures, and most states have packages with a whole list of disclosures that includes state statutes. No, it doesn't include state statutes. I'm sorry. It includes the covenants. It includes the bylaws. It includes the articles of incorporation. It includes a number of states have different requirements as well. I'm not sure that all of those disclosures really help. For a start, a lot of them, you know, you end up with a bunch of paperwork, legalese, legal mumbo jumbo, subject to interpretation, that is the size of one of those good old fashioned phone books from maybe Washington, D.C., New York City, or Chicago, Illinois, where you have millions of pages of junk, small print. Nobody's going to read that. Nobody's going to understand that. It doesn't really do the job, does it?
No. Not only do they not read it, and nobody reads it, the attorney doesn't read it. They would have to charge you $5,000 just to read through those documents. And I've never seen an individual take the budget for the association to an accountant or a CPA to even make sure that it makes sense. So not only do you have people that don't read, people that don't understand, and no advocate for them, but you have these state statutes with absolutely no teeth. So if a board wants to violate the state statute, there's no penalty. And in order for to get a board or a property management company to follow state statutes, and we all know that they're different from state to state, would require going to court to force them to adhere to the state statutes. And people simply don't have that kind of money. And when they're being hoodwinked by lack of disclosure or incomplete disclosures, there's no recourse except to hire someone to go to court. And people don't even know when they're being hoodwinked. They don't know when the disclosures are, how shall I say, falsified. And I've seen this dozens of times where, example, the question is, has a special assessment been levied, or is one planned in the next 6 months to a year? And they will emphatically say no, because they are calling a special assessment anything from a capital reserve or a direct charge or temporary increase in fees. So we get to the Tower of Babel, where it looks like a special assessment, it smells like a special assessment, it walks like a special assessment, and yet they are not disclosing it, and they're calling it by another name. And that, in my opinion, is criminal.
So a buyer goes in, and they're told that this is what they're buying, this is what it's going to cost them, there's an HOA, this is what the HOA does, this is what the HOA fees are. So they go in thinking, all right, that still leaves me X number of dollars every month so I can take the family out to dinner. And then all of a sudden there's a special assessment and they have to go and borrow more money to pay that, and they don't know about it?
Correct. And where the system is really failing borrowers that take out a loan to buy in an association-governed community is the banker, pursuant to federal guidelines, they must examine all of the buyer's debt, liabilities, and their income and assets. Where the banker is failing is to assess their ability to repay the loan. It's called ATR, that's the acronym, ATR, ability to repay. And what directly affects that borrower's ability to repay the loan that may have been sold to Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac in the secondary mortgage market, what directly affects their ability to repay is the dues or assessments, how high they are, how frequently they go up, but also the presence of, or the potential presence of a special assessment. which on average in a 40-year-old building can run in the, you know, easily $30,000, $40,000 per unit. And I have seen those special assessments, or call them whammy charges, go as high as $200,000 per unit.
Yeah, I've heard them in that range. So you go in, you're sort of squeezing every dime out to be able to afford the American dream, and then you get slammed with something that's just going to pull the rug out from under your feet, right?
Correct, and it also sets the entire association up for a hostile takeover.
Explain that.
By an investor that wants to come in and take over a majority ownership interest and deconvert the building from condominium back to rental, and that is happening all over the country.
Why right would now. They want to take a condominium down to a rental? What's the advantage mm-hmm. of doing that? Sarah?
Yes, I'm here.
What's the advantage of doing that?
To the homeowner? There is no advantage whatsoever.
No, not to the homeowner. Not to the homeowner, but to the hostile takeover. Why would someone want to come in and take over a building and turn it into...
It's all about the money to generate income for investors. And they buy the units that they force the remaining owners to sell at reduced below market values. And they can do that once they take over majority ownership. And basically they are the board, and they can force a deconversion, as I call it. The remaining owners are forced out, and then the investor takes over the income stream.
I've heard of that happening quite a bit, but also there's been a lot of concerns about things going the other way, where you have rental property that has been sold into condominiums, and you start off with maybe a 20-year-old building with no reserve set aside. And all of a sudden, people come in and they buy into these homes. There's nothing there to make the repairs on a 20, 30, 40-year-old building, right?
Correct. What we're seeing as I have a vision of the time machine. You remember the book and the movie. What we're seeing over time is a building will go up. It will be apartments for 10 or 15 years. Let's say it went up in 1965. It'll be apartments for 10 or 15 years, and then it gets converted to condominiums. And like as you said, with little to no reserves. and it might be condominium for a period of time, and then the downturn hits in 2006, 2007. Then there's an exodus of owners from the building because they're underwater. They have negative equity. And then come the vultures in 2012, 13, 14, 15 to today, looking, scouring the market to find associations that are troubled, that have high or very low owner occupancy rates, that might be 60, 70% tenants. And that is their target, to then deconvert the building once again back to rental. So you start off with rental, go to condo, and then back to rental again. And that's the cycle that we're seeing now. And it's quite frightening because of the individuals that bought and thought that they owned a piece of real estate, fee simple, when in fact they are really owning subject to the composition and direction of a board that can be taken over by investors.
Now, this is all very complex and complicated. The whole transactions, I mean, you're a realtor, you've seen, you know how this whole thing works. But when you're a housing consumer and all you want is a little bit of something to call your own, how much of this should people be looking into? How realistic is it to expect an average buyer to understand what they're getting into? Because when something hits the fan, they're going to be told, hey, you agreed to this. you said, you raised your hand and said, I agree. I take it. That's not the truth, is it?
You are absolutely correct.
So,
they don't know what they're agreeing to at all. And that gets back to your point of education. For a long time, I have thought that buyers needed at least a half a day course in understanding their rights and responsibilities and the liabilities as it relates to buying into homeowners associations or condominium associations. But there is no such mandatory education. But at a minimum, they need to understand that underlying contract, and they don't, and nobody explains it to them. Their attorney doesn't, their broker doesn't, their accountant doesn't. So it's a huge problem that it's a sleeping crisis is what I would call it.
But how realistic is it to expect them to understand that? I mean, after all, you go and buy a car, you don't have to take a course in mechanics to understand how that car runs.
Oh, but you do have to go and sit and study a booklet and sit down and take an exam to get a driver's license.
That's a driver's license. But, you know, you can learn how to, you know, that you have to pay a mortgage, that you have to pay the electric bill, you have to pay the following things, you have to make the following repairs. That's general. But when it comes down to the kind of details that we're talking about right now with conversions and hostile takeovers and special assessments and, you know, all of the other stuff, how realistic is it to make someone sit down for half a day, listen to that, absorb that, and then say, oh, yeah, it sounds like heaven on earth? You know, come on, it's not that realistic, is it, Sarah?
You make a very good point, Shu.
It's not that realistic. Everybody grew up in a house, whether they owned it or whether they rented it. Everybody grew up in a house. Everybody expects to live in a house. They don't understand how to build it. They don't understand the mechanics of it. They never did. Now we've taken it to the next level, and we've made it a mess.
There are some programs for mortgages. I'm going to draw a parallel or try to draw a parallel here. There are some programs for mortgages that require borrowers to attend a seminar or training before they get the mortgage, so that they understand it. And some of these may be municipalities or counties or states. It's not administered by the federal government, but there are certain programs that in order for the borrower to get the money, they need to attend training. And I can easily see how this concept might be able to be transferred to borrowers or owners that are in homeowner associations, that they at least understand the basics before they get involved. Or if they are involved, that they can still take the training.
Back when I was in real estate, we used to have these buyer seminars, and the whole thing was that it was designed to get people to buy a house. So everything was all hunky-dory. Yes, we told them that, you know, there was a mortgage there, but we also told them all the benefits about being a homeowner. And we're going back, gosh, I don't know, 20 years, more than 30 years almost.
Sure.
Things weren't quite as bad as they are now, but basically these seminars, these workshops, whatever they were free, and we had cookies and water and what, you know, all of these wonderful things, and everybody will show up for free food, right?
Right.
And so we would tell them about the benefits, and, you know, mortgage companies would get involved, and the loan officers would get involved, and they'd work with the realtors, and they'd set up these training programs, these seminars, these workshops, to try and get clients. I mean, that was the goal. It wasn't to educate people. It wasn't to say, hey, we're selling something that has the potential of being very dangerous. and an absolute
the potential
nightmare.
Of being what?
Very dangerous and an absolute nightmare for you down the road,
yes.
Which is what it is, Sarah.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the title of that seminar has not changed in all these years, and I think it was called How to Buy a Home in Today's Market.
Okay, they're still doing them, huh?
And the title is still, you know, 30 years ago, 20 years ago, even today, it's still the same title. And you're quite correct. You bring in the loan officer and the title company representative and maybe the appraiser or the insurance agent. But then again, these are all people that are actually profiting from the actual sale.
Yeah.
And there is no homeowner association education whatsoever.
There isn't. There never has been. But the thing is, it's everything is so vague that I don't think there's any way you can give an accurate lesson. It's so big. Every year, every state comes up with more legislation empowering associations. So what was true today may not be true next year. Telling you that you have these rights may not translate to what rights you'd be selling if you sold that house next year or tomorrow even, which is really scary.
Well, and the thing is that a board can get away with any type of behavior unless there is sufficient resistance from the owners to counter their behavior. So they make rules that are really not enforceable. I have seen associations that the board of directors will say, well, no renting is allowed, when clearly within the documents renting is allowed. And this is just an example. The ability to rent is a right that is associated with homeownership. And I've seen boards that just make up rules that are completely contrary to their governing documents. And unless there is sufficient resistance, everybody follows these rules that are completely arbitrary, and often with selective enforcement.
So when a homeowner runs into some of these arbitrary rules and all of a sudden finds out that they can't do something they thought they could do, there's really very little for them to do except hire an attorney. And
Correct. Go
to court, and finding an attorney is almost like trying to find a needle in a haystack. An attorney
Absolutely.
That will represent them and
I've
understand.
I've been there, I've done that.
You've been there, you've done that, right.
It is a horrible path to go down. I can't even imagine what it is like for the typical homeowner. I thought as a 30-year veteran broker that I had excellent resources. And when the time came to try to retain an attorney, I couldn't get anybody to take the case. They only represent the homeowners associations, unless you're willing to plop down at least $10,000 on a retainer and spend perhaps up to $100,000 or more in court fighting, which is completely out of the grasp of your average homeowner. But having gone, you know, making calls to attorneys, calling the state's attorney, calling the attorney general's office, calling the legal aid society, and on and on and on. There is no real resource or help for homeowners that find themselves embroiled in a battle with their HOA.
I think if you find an attorney who's an HOA attorney, I would steer clear of them because it is a huge conflict of interest.
Mm-hmm.
They make their money from making laws that are going to benefit them where you lose, where the homeowner loses. It's finding an attorney on the other side who understands these laws and can put on a good defense or a good offense or something. So I think people don't understand what they've got. People don't understand where they are. People are frustrated. We clearly hear that. But nobody ever sits down with them and asks them what they want when they buy a home. Nobody says, what is it that you need? What are your needs? Is this working for you? Is an HOA working for you? Do you want
to
be told?
That goes back to options. And in many, many, many cases, there are no options left for homeowners to purchase, given a certain area, anything but properties that are located in an HOA.
So we're shunting people in there, but we're not asking them what they want. Nobody's listening. Nobody's talking. Nobody's telling anybody anything. And we keep building these things and throwing mm-hmm. people into them. How do we reach?
I agree. Nobody's talking about it, and nobody's listening.
So how do you
are absolutely correct.
So how do we? I don't want emotional responses. How do we reach?
Say that again.
I said I don't necessarily want a bunch of emotional responses. Oh, I love that house because I've got a view of the river from the upstairs bedroom.
That's exactly what I'm doing. I'm looking at a river from the upstairs bedroom. Are you here?
And so you're happy. Okay. But the thing
how
is,
did you know, Shu?
How did I know? I've got these voyeurism tendencies. I can see through phone lines and through radio boards. And but no, there's the emotional aspect. You know that.
Mm-hmm.
Buying a home is an emotional purchase, right?
Right.
But how do we reach people who truly understand what they're buying into and find out what they want? And when nobody's asking them, is this what you want? How would you change it? How would you design this whole concept? Do you want an HOA? Do you need an HOA?
That's the million-dollar question, Shu. We have designed courses for our local board of realtors and our state association of realtors, and we floated it up to the National Association of Realtors because typically the first person in line is a realtor when a buyer gets ready to buy. And nobody wants anything to do with the education of the realtors on this topic. And it's a damn shame. It's shameful.
But
so the buyers are out there, well, everybody else is buying in, and I'm going to buy it too because monkey see, monkey do. And who was it? The Ringling Brothers said something about nothing draws a crowd like a crowd. So you get a crowd
true.
Of people in an open house trailer buying new construction in an HOA subdivision. Everybody thinks it's, heaven on earth.
That's an excellent point.
They get in and they find out it's something else.
Okay. I want to reach the people. I want to find out what people want, but I want them to make a decision based on real education. None of this nonsense about protecting property values, which we think is, which we know is not true. None of the nonsense about, any of that other stuff. What do they want? Design your dream home. That does not usually include someone telling them what to do and how to do it.
Correct. And I think it's very appropriate on the heels of Martin Luther King Day that we point out that protecting property values basically is a smokescreen for keeping out the minorities. And that's, in my opinion, how it all started, because the HOA movement really started to take off when the Fair Housing Act of 1968 was made law. And Ward Lucas points that out in his book, Neighbors at War, with precise language. So when you think about it, oh, this protects property values. It's a gated community. That's where it originated. That's how it took off, in my opinion. And I recently performed an analysis here at the request of another individual that asked me to look at certain neighborhoods in Chicago and the older housing stock, which was built in the 1940s and was not in an HOA, and the newer subdivisions within that neighborhood that were in an HOA. And in effect, the newer homeowner associations, when I say newer, I mean anything 20 years old or less, they are paying double. Not only are they paying on average $5,000 a year to the county, you know, for taxes, real estate taxes, but they're paying another $5,000 a year for their HOA fees. So it is effectively twice as expensive in the same neighborhood to live in an HOA-governed community than in an older home that is not in an HOA.
Well, we've always known that the reason we have HOAs is a form of double taxation. But you're absolutely correct in terms of the fair housing laws and, you know, some of the laws that came about. I talked to the late, great, in my opinion, Fred Goldbecker, and he said when Reston first started, they couldn't get people out there to look at it. Nobody was interested because now it was in an HOA. But what they did was they went into some of the older neighborhoods, and I've had people talk about it, saying, oh, yeah, I grew up in that neighborhood. And I remember the realtors coming by and saying that we're going to have an influx of minorities moving into this neighborhood, and you'd better get out while you can before your property values plummet. And so they were taking them out to some of the newer subdivisions with an HOA. And selling them those properties. So there was a lot of funny business going on, a lot of manipulation, a lot of lying, a lot of cheating, a lot of stealing, in my opinion. And nobody was protecting the people. Nobody.
Mm-mm.
So all
I agree.
So I remember when I took my classes, real estate classes, was told, you know, redlining is illegal and all of these things that are illegal. But then you find out that the reason they're illegal is because they've been done in the past.
Mm-hmm. The terms steering and redlining come to mind.
So they were steering people in certain directions. They were redlining. They were doing all kinds of things. Lying like hell. Because I remember someone saying, oh, yeah, I used to live in that neighborhood. And the realtors would come and they'd bang on the door and they'd tell us to do this, that, and the other. And my father basically told them to go take a hike. He wasn't budging. He wasn't moving. He stayed right there and he survived. We survived. We grew up in that neighborhood.
That's a good story.
But this is talking to people who'd actually lived through that period.
Mm-hmm.
So I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
So to try and find out what people are thinking, first of all, I think we need to get them educated so they understand what they're doing and what they're getting into, correct?
Correct.
Because otherwise you're just going to get a lot of emotional thing. Oh, I love my house because I can see a river. I'm sitting up here in my bedroom looking down at a river. And ha ha. So.
Yeah, absolutely. There's, you know, the psychology of selling. When it comes to residential real estate, it's predominantly emotional with rare exception. When you get into income-producing or investment properties, it's not emotional at all. It's about the money. It's about the income stream. It's about numbers and figures and facts.
Yeah, that's numbers.
But residential real estate is entirely different.
Yeah, it's an emotional purchase.
Mm-hmm.
It's a totally emotional purchase. So how do we take it from an emotional purchase to something? And I think it needs to be emotional because you have to fall in love with your house, but you have to see all the warts and accept them, as some people will.
Well, that is what is so insidious about homeowner associations. It's the warts are very hard to see. They're hard to find because nobody reads the documents, and they're even harder to see, you know, because many owners don't even go to board meetings, but it's very rare for a prospective buyer to actually ask to sit in to see how the meetings are run. And if they're happy people or if there's hostility in the room. Now, I have had occasions where, in the case of cooperatives, where a board will require a prospective buyer to come in and meet with the board to see if they pass the board's requirements for a resident. But that's a one-way street.
A lot of associations will not allow non-members to attend the meeting.
Correct.
The meetings, and here's the other fallacy with HOAs, in my opinion. You have monthly meetings or quarterly meetings or however. People don't buy a house to attend meetings. They buy a house to live in it. Mm-hmm. I was on the board. I attended meetings. I haven't been to a meeting for a long time. But it sort of becomes a career in a way. And that's not realistic.
Not at all.
That is not realistic.
And I just stepped down as president of my board last month. And I will tell you, I mean, it's a lot of work. It's thankless work, and you don't get paid for it. In my opinion, the entire system is, the HOA system is just
flawed.
It's a sham. It doesn't work, and it needs to be reformed.
It's flawed.
I don't know, I'm at a loss for words. But I think you understand what I'm saying, that the reform really is necessary, and I just don't know how we're going to get there.
Well, I think, first of all, we've got to admit that the emperor is stark raving nuts and naked as a jaybird. Because
yes.
you just can't sugarcoat this stuff. You really can't sugarcoat this stuff. You have to admit and acknowledge that there are some serious issues and problems with them. You also have to admit that there's nothing in it for the homeowner. The biggest lie is the property values. I think I saw something I get so much stuff, and I just have a hard time keeping up with everything. But there was something that came in through my inbox about an association where there's a whole lot of special assessments. That's not protecting your property values. If you're going to have to cough up tens and hundreds of thousands of dollars because the people in charge have not maintained or done a good job of reserves or maintaining the property, and all of a sudden you're stuck with it, that's taking money out of your pocket. That's reducing the value of your property by whatever that special assessment is.
Mm-hmm.
So we know that that doesn't work. We know that that's a lie.
Correct.
And you can give people all the information ahead of time. They're not going to understand it. My daughter, the first house they bought, comes to mind. I said, make sure you get a disclosure packet, and before you sign off on it, you have in Virginia, you have all of 72 hours to read through that gibberish and say, I do. So I said, bring it to me and let me have a look at it. So she did. And I look at it, and the financials are 6-8 months out of date. I said, you can't take this. I said,
mm-hmm.
Tell your realtor you want up-to-date information. Well, it turns out that the house had sold before, and the seller had bought the package and had the package, and they bought the house 8 months later. And they just gave them that information. So she went back to the realtor. She says, my mom says I want the updated financials. And she says, why? It's the same thing. And she sort of intimidated my daughter and said, you know, you don't need that. What's wrong with your mother? What's her problem? Nothing's changed. Wait a minute. Excuse me. What do you mean nothing's changed? You don't give out outdated information. But they do. So there's so many booby traps there. So many booby traps.
Yes, I'm well aware of it. It's a shame.
So how do we fix it? How do we get people to understand? My daughter didn't care. She didn't really understand. She was young. She was buying a house. She didn't understand what the ramifications of all that were.
Unfortunately, they don't understand until there's a problem. Then they get it.
So the realtor says, hey, what's wrong with your mother? The problem's me, not the fact that they're not willing to give you up-to-date information.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is me. What's wrong with her? Why does she want that? Who does she think she is? Oh, my God.
Right.
So how do we bypass all of that? And how do we find out what people want? I mean, I keep wanting to come back to that. I know that there are a lot of surveys. In fact, Chippy's doing one right now that we've talked about on this show. And I would recommend, if you want your voice heard, people, you know, answer the survey. Just tell us what's on your mind. I'm in favor of having people just write and say, this is what I like and this is what I don't like. And this is what I wish I could fix.
I think it's interesting to note, Shu, I was going through my files and found, let's see here, here it is, the Houston Association of Realtors conducted a consumer research survey back in 2012, helping shape the future of real estate in Houston. And this was, and they published the results, and very scientific. And one of the questions on the survey was, are you a member of a homeowners association? And two-thirds of the respondents belong to homeowners associations. And one of the other questions was, how much do you believe your homeowner association preserves the quality of your neighborhood and protects your rights as a property owner? 47%, the majority said somewhat. And then the other question that I think is very relevant here is, would you support continued legislative efforts to oversee the activities of homeowner associations to ensure that they are looking out for the best interest of homeowners? And the key word here is support continued legislative efforts to oversee homeowners associations. And 83% of the respondents said yes, that they would clearly support legislative oversight of HOAs. Now, this came out of Houston, Texas, but I think that the response rate, 83% of respondents said that they would support legislative efforts to oversee HOAs. I think that speaks volumes.
I agree with you. I absolutely agree with you. I'm not sure that any legislative oversight has ever been done. You've got a lot of laws that are just that. They're laws.
Mm-hmm.
9 times out of 10, they've been tweaked to empower associations, and nobody is enforcing anything. It's still up to you
to correct.
Try to find an attorney and go to court and say, see, the Texas legislature says that you're supposed to be nice to me.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, Texas is one of the states that experiences the most homeowner abuse in HOAs. It's awful in the state of Texas. It's a non-judicial foreclosure state, and they can foreclose, a homeowners association can foreclose on an owner in 30 days and sell their, as you know, and sell their house on the courthouse steps. The abuse there, I don't think, Beanie Adolph, I believe, was tracking it for a while. Do you know what the status is there on tracking HOA foreclosures?
Geneva Kirk Brooks had gone to court, and she had bought all the records on foreclosures. And before she died, she just handed the whole thing over to Beanie. And Beanie, with the help of her sons, managed to set up a website called hoadata.org,
mm-hmm.
hoadata.org, where they sort out foreclosure filings, not the actual foreclosures, but the foreclosure filings for that period of time. And they sort it out by HOA and, interestingly enough, by the attorney. With the greatest number of foreclosure filings. You know, they get a heck of a lot of money just to file these things, not even go through with them. Trying to pull that is pretty expensive. I don't know. You know, that took a lot of work. Her sons helped her with it. One of them is an attorney. One of them's an engineer. So I was talking to Beanie the other day. There may be a follow-up on that, but you're talking about a number of years that somebody's going to have to go to court, and they're going to have to pull out all of the foreclosure filings from that date forward. And I understand that it's quite expensive to buy those records. And, of course, there's a lot of, you know, Beanie is one of the angels on earth. I mean, she is just
indeed.
One of the most
absolutely
amazing. Do you know she's never lived in an HOA? And I think
I think you may have mentioned that they were trying to force an HOA on her.
The thing about Texas, from what I understand,
in her neighborhood.
Yeah, the thing about Texas, from what I understand, is, and I don't know how they can get away with it, but apparently the state can enact legislation that affects only certain jurisdictions. So in Houston, it is permissible legally for 51% of the owners in a non-HOA-controlled subdivision to impose a mandatory membership association on all the members, which means you're giving up rights that you already have. The bundle of rights that you buy, that you acquire when you buy real estate, you're giving those rights up. And I don't know how they can get away with it, but apparently, that's my understanding anyway, apparently that is only the law in Houston. So somebody decided, oh, we think we would like to have an HOA in our subdivision. And Beanie and another attorney who moved out, Wendy, did some research, and they discovered all the downsides, all the reasons why they did not want to have an HOA. And so they fought it, and they encouraged, supported the Civic Association. So that's a non-forced membership. People donated money if they wanted to. They have newsletters. They have meetings. They have a lot of that cohesive community feeling without the adversarial HOA nonsense that goes with it. Beanie's still involved with that. Wendy sold and moved south, and she's quite happy not living. I mean, she didn't live in an association, but she's quite happy not living in an HOA. Beanie is still doing the newsletters and getting them delivered and getting the collecting the dues for people who want to pay and belong to the civic group and all of that. And she's been working tirelessly on that. Add to that, she's been working on HOA issues. She has the HOA Reform website where she tracks and sends out articles about HOAs from around the country. She also helps out with HOAs. And right now they're working on coming up with a legislative agenda to take to Austin when they go into session. So she's an incredible lady. And in the midst of all that, I think somebody suggested, hey, you need to do some more work and update that. Beanie's no spring chicken. But she hasn't stopped working, and that's amazing.
It is amazing, really amazing. And my hat is off to her, and I am very grateful for her work, and I subscribe to her website, and she's an amazing woman, just amazing.
What I love about her is that she's done so much, but she never takes credit for it.
Yeah.
Unlike some people who seem to think that everything started when they came on the scene and they take credit for everything, whether they deserve to or not.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the nice thing about Beanie never having lived in it. There is no personal agenda there. She doesn't have to prove anything. And I think that's what makes her so effective and not sort of a cartoon figure. Like so many advocates out there.
I remember years ago when I was conducting research for my book, and the name Beanie Adolph kept coming up, and I just remember thinking, is this a real person?
Yeah.
And then I came to find out, yes, indeed, it was a very real person, and not only a real person, but one that deserves more respect than anyone I can imagine for her efforts and HOA reform and exposing the problems. And I am very grateful to her for her work. With a name like Beanie, it's like, do you know, how did she get that name? Do you know?
It's a nickname. Her name is Irene.
Oh, okay. Thank you for telling me. I never knew.
So, yeah, no, she's always been Beanie. I had Wendy on the show, and I get this email from Beanie saying, I listened to the show and I loved it. And I go, oh, somebody listened to the show.
Well, I hope she hears this one. Thank you, Beanie, for all of your hard work.
I will make sure she hears it. She, no, she's an absolutely amazing lady. She's also put up a couple of conferences in Texas. I actually attended a couple of them, which were great. And they pulled all the people together. And they all worked together and came up with a legislative agenda. And she's gone and helped and worked with so many individuals and found resources for them, put them in touch with people who could help them. And she's pretty amazing.
Yes, indeed.
She's an amazing lady. So we need a lot more Beanies and a lot less.
We do.
And a lot less cartoon characters. We've got 1 minute left. So I want to know where people can go. We do want to hear from people, don't we?
Absolutely. The website address is www.chippi, spelled chppi.org. And on the homepage, on the middle of the homepage, on the left-hand side, there is a link that an individual can click on to take the survey and express their rate of satisfaction or not on a number of different issues, and the data will be aggregated at the end of this month.
So don't let other people decide for you. Don't let other people speak for you. And that's what's been happening all too often. Special interests will tell the legislators that they're there representing the homeowners. Ha-ha. Guess what? They have your well-being, your needs, wants, and requirements are the furthest things from their minds. So make sure that your voice is heard. Even if you disagree with everything and anything that I've ever said on the air or that we've said today, we still want to hear from you. We still want to know what's on your mind, what you think. Speak for yourself. Don't let someone else speak for you. I always enjoy having you on, and I always enjoy your laugh.
Thank you, Sue. That's back at you. You are amazing, truly amazing, and I thank you for having me visit with you today. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks a lot. Thanks to everybody. Have a great time, and let us know what you
think.
Please
check out our website at onthecommons.us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to justice for HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.